Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Age of Heroes, I'm proud to bring you The Art of Healing with Dr. Tak Young.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Have I got a treat for you tonight? We're going to be talking with renowned psychic, soul intuitive, Eddie Connor. Now, I'm warning you in advance, prepare to fall in love. Eddie is a radio host, an author, a humorist, and a keynote speaker who has appeared on hundreds of talk shows and television shows and was voted one of the best psychics and mediums in Los Angeles by CBS. Besides being a psychic and a medium, Eddie is an accomplished seminar leader, speaker, and tours the globe conducting metaphysical retreats in the Far East, the Mexican Riviera, Alaska, Hawaii, and South America. Please welcome to The Art of Healing my guest, Mr. Eddie Connor.
Oh, my goodness. How are you doing, Tak?
I'm fine. So much better now that you're here, Eddie, I must say. How are you this evening?
I am doing really well. I am, especially after that introduction, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm like all warm and fuzzy.
Oh, good. Well, you are fabulous, and I want our audience to get to know you a little bit tonight. Now, we can tell by your accent that you don't come from Brooklyn, Eddie. So what is your history and background? Where do you hail from?
I hail from North Carolina. I was born in the 60s there in the backwoods. We're literally in the foothills of North Carolina in a little trailer park out there. And we grew up in an era where you were to be seen and not heard. You speak when you're spoken to, and a look was all you needed to get back in line.
Yes, I think many of us can recognize that mother's look that we've all gotten from time to time. Well, now, you had time then as a kid to play in the backwoods, but how and when did you discover that you were psychic?
That it turns out, I found out much later that I'm a third generation psychic. So it's me, and then it's my mom, and then my mom's mom. And I found out before I knew what the word psychic was, we lived in the projects before we moved to the trailer park. And my birth dad and my mom lived there together with my other two brothers before my baby brother Doodlebug was born. Because in the South, you got to name at least one child after a snack food, I found out. And so we lived in the projects, and then Mama left my dad. And the straw, I think, that broke the camel's back was he had come home rageful again. And my mom was very pregnant with my third brother at the time. So it was me and Bobby, and then she's pregnant with Carrie. And he was just in another rage, and he beat my mom to a pulp. And because of the way we were raised, he did that. He beat her to a pulp, and then he stormed out. And I just sat quietly next to her, not knowing what to do. I was just putting the busted pieces of the bowls and things back together. And then I remembered as clear as a bell, I was just praying and asking for help on what do I do. And then my question kept looping in my head, is she dead? Is Mama dead? And then this light, it was not one beam of light. I always describe it like when you're swimming underwater and you're really deep and the sun's light is coming through and those beautiful, bright beams, that's how it came through on the walls where the cabinets were, down into the kitchen, all around Mom. And it almost had like it had harmony to it, and it had a vibration to it and a feeling. It was almost like on a soul level, it was sort of a harmonic convergence, and it came onto Mom, and then I heard in the light that she was okay and that the baby was okay. And then an angel came right into the light and just sort of more holographic than anything, but it was a full-on angel. And then I thought, well, maybe that's where I'm hearing this from, that Mom's okay and the baby's okay. And it lasted no more than a minute or so. And as soon as the light pulled back and disappeared, everything was so drab after that. But then Mom started to stir. She started to mumble. And true to my mama, her nature, she acted like nothing happened. And she helped me pick up the busted bowls and plates, and she just kept making supper. And that was the first time I ever saw the angels in such a profound way with the light, because it would normally be like a ghost or just an angel or just a dead relative or just the light. But that time it was two for two.
My goodness. And how did this affect you and your brothers?
My brother, Bobby, didn't see it. Terry is intuitive as he got older. And my baby brother, my mom divorced my stepfather when I was in the seventh grade. But I kept having psychic experiences where I would see ghosts. I was on Grandma's front porch when we were in elementary school one Saturday, and we're playing on the front porch because, you know, you don't play around in Grandma's house, and even if it's a thunderstorm and an electrical storm outside, Grandma's going to put you on the porch and get her out of her hair. And so we're playing literally on the front porch, and Bobby and me and Terry were playing on the far right-hand side of the porch. It was a big porch as they have in the South, and I heard a man snoring. And I looked around. At first, I thought it was Grandma, because she could snore, too, like a big old man, honey. And I looked through the fan in the window when she wasn't in her, I call it her Bible chair, sleeping or napping. You know, I'm resting my eyes. And she wasn't there. And then I saw on the opposite side of the porch, there's an old man in overalls and a hat, and he was porch, the house part of the porch, and he was just sleeping. He had the hat pulled over his face. He was just really snoring loudly. And I looked at my brothers, and I looked back at him, and I looked at my brothers. I'm like, do you see that? And they looked over and like, I don't see anything. And I was just covered with goosebumps. And I wanted to go and ask him who he was, because you don't mess with Grandma's house. And there's a strange guy there, and I knew we would get in trouble for it. And all of a sudden, he clutched his chest, and he stopped snoring, and he started gasping. And then his hat fell off. He was clutching his chest and his arm. Then he fell off the porch. And this is during a pouring rain and a thunderstorm. Falls off the porch into Grandma's flower bed. And you don't go in Grandma's flower bed. And I ran to the side of the porch. He was laying there holding his arm, and I reached to help him, and he reached back up to me and disappeared into thin air.
Wow.
I was terrified, and I looked at Bobby and Terry. They never saw it. They never heard it. They didn't have any of that experience whatsoever. And, yeah, that's when I started to think I'm a cray-cray person.
Yeah, you would. And your brothers, now, to this day, do they have any hint of this gift as well, or is it just you?
It's interesting. That's such a good question, because out of the four of us boys, it's me, for sure, and then my brother, Terry. Terry would start to tell me experiences when we were full-on grown. I was in my 50s when Terry would start to ask me questions. Like when we first moved to the trailer, it was in the woods. So we had to clear out all of this, literally forest. And we had a creek that ran around two sections of the property. And every night, not long after we moved in, there would be this thing. I slept by myself. Mama put me in a room by myself, and Bobby and Terry shared a room. And every single night, there was this thing about, it would be about 4 foot tall, and it had this big head and these big eyes. And every night, that damn thing would lean forward, sort of at a diagonal, so you couldn't see anything in the door frame. All of a sudden, it would lean to the left, and you would start to see the side of its head, and then its fingers would come around the side of the door frame. And when it would, I would just throw the covers over my head or close my eyes until it went away. I never told a soul about that. I used to sketch pictures of it and stuff. I still have those pictures. And fast forward to that, I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And then now I'm in my 50s, and Terry said, "Hey, listen, did you ever see some weird little thing peeking into your room when you were a kid?" And I was like, oh, my God. And we were seeing some of the same things, but, you know, being Southern boys, you don't talk about anything but sports and fishing.
Well, okay, so that's – now, are you still in touch with your other siblings?
I live out in Los Angeles. They all live back home really close to where I was born and raised. And, yeah, we stay in touch, especially my baby brother, Doodlebug. His real name is Robert, but I still call him Doo or Doodle, and he calls me Bub or Bubba. And talk to Bobby and Terry once in a while. Bobby's birthday just passed. But it's a totally different kind of relationship now since Mom and my stepdad and my other stepdad passed away.
So did they think you were crazy at the time? I know you didn't talk about it as such, but when you did they think you were crazy or, you know, needed mental help?
They still think I need mental help.
Oh, we all do. All of us do.
Right? So
yeah.
When we were growing, yeah, they did for a while. One time, We were coming home. We were walking down the street from the bus stop, and trailer park kids are mean. They're just a lot of just mean. And that was back in the day, CAC, when the first graders rode the bus with the 12th graders. So there were no separate buses for elementary, middle school, and high school. And it was rough and tumble, survival of the fittest. And we were walking down the hill. And there was a guy named William. He was so mean. William was mean. He was like 6'4". He was in the fourth grade, and he was 37 years old. And he lived next door, and his grandmother lived beside of him and his mom. And I said, oh, my gosh, I just had this weird feeling that somebody's going to have a heart attack. And I was like, no, 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 they're going to fall through a sliding glass door or a window. I don't know. Fast forward to that night, early in the a.m. hours, an ambulance came up our dirt road, and his, I think, grandmother had a heart attack and fell through the plate glass window.
And oh, my goodness.
Things like that would happen. One time at the bus stop, when we all got our asses beat, I just punched one time too many. I probably have a head injury. And I said to Jimmy, I was like, your bus is going to turn over and send every one of you to the hospital. And I was the quiet kid. And this just came out of me like an explosion, and the fight stopped, everything stopped, and then their bus came. They got on their bus. My brothers got on the bus. The bullies got on the bus, and then the bus left. And our bus came 10 minutes later, picked us up to go to the middle school. And on the way to middle school, you know how kids are loud and rowdy on a bus? They just are screaming and yelling. And out of nowhere, everybody got dead quiet, super, super silent. And then everyone stood up and was doing that gasping thing. And I was in the back of the bus just trying not to draw attention to myself because I'd already embarrassed myself at the bus stop. And I looked over, and their bus was laying on its side. It had been hit by a tractor trailer as it was turning the corner to go to the elementary school and knocked it over on its side and busted all the windows out of it. And there were parents trying to pull kids from the top windows of the overturned bus. It turned over on the side where you get on and off the bus, but the tractor trailer had dented the emergency door closed. And it's laying on its side. They're pulling children through the busted windows. And then I looked over, and on the back of the ambulance, my brothers were sitting there with the guys that beat us up that morning. And then all the kids, like in this orchestrated, choreographed way, row by row, turned around and looked at me like I was a character from a Stephen King novel.
Yes, of course. Moral of the story, do not mess with Eddie.
Yeah, well, that's more things like that kept happening. And then my brother started to believe. And then they stopped thinking I was as crazy. It was just weird.
Well, now, were there other psychics around the area that people knew of? Were there people that did palm readings and psychic readings? Was that kind of familiar in your township or your living area?
It was not that I was aware of, because it was a super, super, super conservative town. I joke and said we didn't have any red lights through Glenola, North Carolina, where I grew up, but we had 77 churches and a 7-Eleven. And there was my mama was, and my grandma, but especially my mama, was the most psychic person I knew. And mama told me years later, when I started doing this for a living, that she used to go up to town. She said, Edward, I would go up to North Main and I would talk to this sweet little woman, and she would do cards. And she told me I would have four boys, no girls, four boys. And that one of my boys I would not get to raise. He would go live with his daddy. And that I would have a psychic youngin. And I said, you did? And she said, yes. I said, when? She said, before you little monsters were born. And I was like, okay. But my mama, she would have experiences. Speaking of psychics, she was scared of it. She didn't like it. Her mother loved it because she used it for control, but it was very conservative. But one time my mama was getting her hair done with her best friend, Charlotte, and Charlotte was a beautician, and the two of them worked at a textile mill together back when, in the early 70s, when women had that giant beehive hairdo, and you would sleep at night with toilet paper wrapped around it so it would last for a whole week. And mama and Charlotte were in the kitchen, and I was a weird kid. I didn't like to play with kids my age. I liked adults. And I was cleaning the trailer up while they were talking. And my mama said to Charlotte, oh my God, I woke up this morning beside of my husband. And I said, okay, who the F are you effing? And I'm not going to say the words on your show. And my stepdad looked at her and said, what are you talking about? And she said, who the F are you effing? And he said, women are so crazy. They're so crazy. And he wouldn't answer the question. And mama told Charlotte the dream she had that night. She said, Charlotte, it was the realest dream I've ever had in my life. I'm washing dishes. The boys are watching TV in the living room. And my husband's at the table doing whatever he's doing. Somebody knocks on the door. I open the door. There's this redheaded woman standing there with two younger girls behind her. And she says, I'm here to see Harmon, my stepdad. And she went, okay. And she looked past her, and there was a yellow convertible Mustang in the driveway under the streetlight. And she closed the door, and she said, Harmon, somebody's here to see you. And mama knew right then and there that he was cheating with that woman. This true story. within days of me hearing my mother have an adult conversation with her best girlfriend, my brothers and I are sitting on the sofa, we're watching television, dad's at the kitchen table, mom is washing dishes, and somebody knocks on the door. And I was covered with goosebumps. And I just looked at my mama. My mama froze, and she put the dishcloth over her shoulders after she wiped her hands. She walked straight over to the door, and she opened it. Cat, there was a redheaded woman standing there on the porch with two younger women behind her, and I leaned far to the right, and I looked past them, and there was a yellow convertible Mustang sitting in our driveway.
Holy Croatia.
And that woman said, "Hey, I'm here." Mom said, "I know who the F you're here for," and slammed the door in her face.
Woo.
And went and told, yeah, my mom was fiery. And she said to my stepdad, "You have effing company." And so he goes out. He's standing on the porch for like 2 minutes, and he gets his ass back in the house. And mama said, "Like I asked you the other day, who the F are you effing? Now I know." And he still denied it to the bitter end. But just how this is when you love being intuitive, and then you get the physical manifestation to back it up. A month later, I'm helping mama do the laundry. That's when you had a washing machine, then you had to hang everything outside on the line to dry.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going through everybody's pockets so that no money or anything important gets washed in the washing machine. And long story short, I pull out this little roll of film, and it was that woman and my stepdad and all four of the little pictures in the strip kissing all over each other. And I handed it to mama, and mama said, "Go tape this underneath my cookbooks." She had a little box that she kept her cookbooks in. I said, "Why put it there?" She said, "Have you ever seen your dad lift his finger in the kitchen or touch anything to help?" And I said, "No, ma'am." She's like, "It'll be the safest in the kitchen." So she got double proof that her psychic prediction was right. And that stuck with me forever. And I remember thinking when I grow up, because I knew I would be this. I just didn't know how, what, when, where, or why. I just knew I would be it. And I right then and there, I would say to myself and my guides, "When I grow up and do this for a living, I want to get physical things that no one can know but the person I'm talking to in a reading or a loved one who comes from the other side and gives it to them." And that kind of has started happening in the last 20, 25 years for me.
Okay, so now you do this professionally, and you told me that you are 3/4 cup psychic and 1/4 cup medium. So what's the difference to you, and what does that mix up and make?
That's such a great question. I started saying that out of insecurity first and foremost, because my entire life I would say I'm not a medium. And a medium is an intuitive that just talks to people who have passed over. And I wasn't as good at that. So I would always say, my guides would fuss at me if they stopped saying that. I would say, "I'm not a medium." A psychic is a person who psychically tunes into the person that he's talking to in person or on the phone to get things like predictions and information about love, money, career, and or other relationships. And when I hear my spirit guides talking to me as a psychic, it sounds like if I were doing a reading for you right now, the spirit guides and the angels, that whole pre-birth planning group, council of elders that comes through and talks to me on behalf of somebody I'm reading for, it sounds like an FM radio signal. very clear, very pristine, very on point. It actually will sound like your voice in my head telling me what to tell you. And when the dead people, I respectfully call them dead people, when they come in and start talking to me, they sound like a staticky, portable AM radio station, duct taped to the back of a donkey's ass going through the Mojave Desert. That's my joke, because when the dead people talk to me, if I'm lucky, I will hear every third or ninth syllable they say. Your guides say, tell Pack she has a windfall of money coming to her that will be at least $1,200. That's exactly how I hear it, but I hear it as it's your voice telling my heart what to tell your heart, FM radio signal. I'm like, yay, yay, yay. And then when the dead people come in, if a dead person said that to me, it would literally sound like this. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then I would see, like, money. I would see, like, a surprising check that I got in my 20s, something weird. And then I have to piece it together. So that's the difference for me. It's starting to get a little more clear because I've stopped in the last 4 years or so. I stopped saying, I'm not a medium. And just so that I can get clearer signals. They still sound choppy, but I'll start to get more poignant pictures with the syllables. I'll start seeing little miniature movies playing out. Wow. Did you ever see the movie The Gift with Kate Blanchett, Katie Holmes, Keanu Reeves, and Greg Kinnear?
Yes.
You know, and also Eve's Bayou is another. Those are my two favorite, quote, psychic-themed movies where they literally are showing you how we get images, thoughts, feelings, words. They're these little, almost like strobe-like images, feelings, words, all piled on top of each other at the same time, like in a kaleidoscope that's vomited into your energy field. And you're desperately trying to grab the pieces so you can put together the story for the person in front of you so they don't think you're the cray-cray psychic. Okay, okay.
Right. Right, right. And so now, what do you prefer, you yourself? Do you like to do the medium part? Do you like to do the psychic part most?
It's funny because I like the psychic part. That's my very clear answer. But what I did not know, I took Lisa Williams' How to Be a Medium 3-day retreat. I love Lisa Williams. She's a world-famous medium, and she's a lovely person, too. And what I learned in that is I was told you can't be a psychic and a medium during the same reading and jump back and forth. She said, because your body takes a beating, and it's like, oh, my goodness, that's all I've ever done. So I'll be talking about your work, your finances, something to do with the gutters on your house. And it's like, hold on a second, there's a guy here saying you fell and broke your arm when you were 6 years old. He's still laughing about it. And they'll say, oh, yeah, that's my dad. And then he'll go back to the gutters on the house. So I switch back and forth between AM and FM. And so all I've ever known is that I'm a hodgepodge of both at the same time, but I prefer the psychic part always because that's where I'm my most comfortable.
Now, do people come back to you several times or weekly or monthly? Do they make a habit of it with you so they can guide their lives?
I do have some people that come monthly, and I, depending on how difficult or challenging the circumstances are, some people will come like once a week for like a month. Some people will do that monthly. And people do come back. It's the weirdest thing. I've done this 30 years now, and it's the only thing I do. And people that I used to do phone readings for that I never saw and or met ever for 30 years. And then when social media popped up, I'm like, oh, that's what Donna looks like. Hey, Donna, it's Eddie, that sort of thing. And now there's Skype and there's Zoom and there's all the other visual mediums. No pun intended.
All right. Now, have you ever done a reading where somebody who's in an altered state, like a coma? Have you ever read for them?
I have not. By the way, that's such a great question, too. I got my questions from you, and I was like, oh, my goodness, these are great questions. I have not, except for when my mom was called me, and she was like, well, Edward, I think I'm ready to go now. So if you would just fly home, son, and help your mother pass away, that would be awesome. That's my mom. And I'm like, okay. So flew home. And when she was in the process of transitioning, I would go and sit with her when she was unconscious and on hospice care the last 4 or 5 days of her life. And I would communicate with her. I did that with my best friend, holding his hand before he passed away in 1993. But now, how it works now is someone will come and say, hi, my dad or my mom is in a coma. That's just an example. Or they're unconscious. How are they going to do? Can you talk to them? And so I'll just ask for their guides to come forth, and they'll give you information. Thank you. I'm sorry I'm saying thank you because they just gave me something. Last night I read for somebody I read for, ironically, once a month. Love this gentleman. He's creative. And he's like you. He's creative, artistic, sensitive, empathic, wonderful, lovely, kind. And he had a brother who passed away, and they didn't get along very well when he was alive because the brother was that kind of person that just didn't get along with people. Fast forward to, it's been that way their whole lives as children and adults. The brother had entitlement issues and was not very warm, fuzzy, friendly, or organized in any way. And the gentleman I'm talking about was warm and fuzzy, connectable, etc. And his brother has only been on the other side less than 4 days, 5 days, I think. And his soul came through, as it does. And because now he has zero attachment to a physical body. And in the green room of heaven, I call it, where he's still getting his bearings about him, he came right in and he explained, because his parents were with him too, explained why he behaved the way he behaved, what his belief systems were on earth, and how it negatively affected him and other people. So he apologized for it, but as soon as he articulated, we were both crying because it was such a weight lifted, because you always kind of want to know why, right? Well, he got the answers to all his decades of whys with his brother, and a weight was lifted off. So the brothers on the other side, people who are in comas and even pregnant women who haven't given birth yet will say, you know, I'm going to talk to my child. So the soul of that child will come through and say things like, I know daddy gets on your nerves when he's crunching his potato chips when you're trying to watch TV. And they're like, oh, my God. And they're like, and I see how you sneak red vines and eat them with your popcorn when daddy's not home. And she's like, oh, my goodness. So they know these things. They watch us. They connect with us. So I don't actively go to do that. I can do it from my office with the person I'm speaking to help bring them some clarity and some lightness and some healing.
Well, that was going to be my next question to you, Eddie. How can you help people heal by using your psychic gifts?
I learned the hard way because I am a giver by nature, and I'm a connector. I love to connect. Some people love to attach. I like to connect. I love to uplift and nurture and be of service. And when I started doing this work while I was working my other three jobs at the same time,
oh,
I was a tired child, but I loved this. I loved it. I would only want to get good things for them because I knew how hard life was for people. So I would, in the very, very beginning, I would almost edit the first few years that I did what I did. I would edit what came through because I wanted the person I was talking to feel happier, to feel more healed, to feel more whole, and to feel more healthy. And then my guide said, you have to stop trying to control it because, yeah, you think you're helping them right now, but we're going to tell you what they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear. And what I've learned since then is it's not my job to edit. It's not my job to control it or take care of the person in front of me personally. It's my job to hold the space energetically and in my heart. And if they can't hear what they're not ready to hear, that's their free will. And I'll tell you the hardest reading to do. The hardest reading to do is when someone wants so desperately to hear what they want to hear that they cannot literally hear anything else.
Yeah.
And I had this one session in the last few years where the woman, I always ask in the very beginning, what areas do you want me to tune into so we could tour the reading to you, right? And she said, I'm making this up. She said, I want to talk about my car, and I want to talk about my garage, and I want to talk about my career. I'm like, perfect. So now it is, we're 58 minutes into her one-hour reading, and she's not hearing what she deserves to hear were her words to me. I don't deserve to be hearing what you're telling me. And I'm like, okay. And you have to learn to not be attached to somebody's behavior, too. That's hard. And she said, I don't deserve to be told what you're telling me. I want what I want. I said, I understand that. And she said, and by the way, if you were any good, you would have picked up my ex-husband. And I said, you asked to speak about your car, your garage, and your job. She said, yes, but if you were really good, you would ask to my husband would have come through and you would have picked him up, who's passed away, by the way. And I said, okay, well, what's his name? Because, you know, you want people to feel happy. She told me his name, and I said three things he told me to say right up front. And she went, net, net, net. And I was like, oh, my God, this poor child, she just wants to hear what she wants to hear. And he said, then ask Sean, and he closed the door on me. The dead man did. And I was like, and I said what I just told you. He said, then ask Sean, and he left the meeting, the circle. And she burst out laughing. I said, who's Sean? She's like, that's the psychic I go to talk to him. And it's like, okay. So it's like the hardest reading is they want what they want. You're simply delivering what their highest power wants them to have. So if it has to be their decision to heal, their decision to receive the clarity, their decision to let it in or not let it in. And that's hard.
Right. And if somebody comes to you and say, hi, I was just diagnosed with fourth stage lymphoma, am I going to make it or is it going to take me? How do you answer something like that?
I always say up front because it's like the thing I'm the least well-versed in is medical intuitive work, medical mediumship, if you will, and I always go in, man, I call them the big guns. And I was like, please help me interpret what I need to interpret on the clearest Wi-Fi frequency possible so I can give this lovely soul the information they need. And I don't edit anything anymore. I don't. Once in a while I'll say, listen, I don't want to say this to you, but I'm going to have to say it. And they're like, just say it. And so rarely it has happened, but rarely have I done a reading for someone where something was going to take them out. But I have done readings for people where it was iffy, close call, and a little sketchy. It was very challenging.
Well, sure. That kind of stuff would be. Now, do you have friends that are psychics as well?
I do have some friends that are psychic, and yes, I do.
Okay, so what do you guys talk about when you get together?
Really nothing. We just talk about regular life things. And once in a while, we'll do this thing with each other where I have a friend who does cards, and she'll say, listen, I have this challenging thing going on. Can I give you a call, and can we trade 15 minutes each? So I'll answer their psychic questions for them, and then they'll answer a psychic question for me. I also dated a psychic. for a minute, and we're still really good friends. He's off married now with his husband and has been for over a decade. But, yeah, that was weird because I'd never dated a psychic. But one of the interesting things about some of my friends that are intuitive and that do it for a living, when the pandemic first happened, a handful of us, we could not get predictions past that day or the week that we were asking about.
Wow.
And I said, you guys, after a week, 2 weeks of this, I was like, I think we're asking the wrong question. I think there's some other thing at play here in addendum to or in harmony with this pandemic. And as soon as we shifted the question, we realized it was so many other layers that was agenda-driven that had little or nothing to do with actually COVID. So that was interesting because one's flipping cards, one's asking their guides, the other one is over there doing the pendulum and muscle testing. And so it was fun to see the information we all came up with. And ironically, we all came up with the same thing, but completely came to each of us based on our psychic filters. But when we put it in the center of the circle, we were all saying the same thing, just different.
Wow. Wow. And what about the police and the FBI? Do you, I have a friend in the Midwest who has solved a lot of different crimes working with the police. And do you do that kind of work?
Ironically, 5 years ago, we shot a sizzle pilot for a show called, I think the working title then was either a mediums investigation or the 36%. And long story short, I ended up working on three cases, tuning into it. And then there was one, we were working on the case we worked on for camera. And then what happened over in Santa Clarita, somebody disappeared from their home. And when the wife came home from work, his truck was there, his car keys, his wallet, the food was still cooking on the stove. He was gone. And so I ended up talking to somebody up there, a reporter or something, with the creator of the show and the executive producer. She's like, talk to my friend Eddie. Long story short, I was like, when you do your search in this area, you're going to find a body over here. And sure enough, they found a body over there. It just wasn't the guy that disappeared. And then I did a reading for the sister of the person who disappeared. And I can't go into it, but it was about a 90-minute reading, details, 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 specifics like I couldn't believe. And long story short, the things that I said in that case all manifested, and now the case has been solved, and the person that I felt like did it, or the couple of people that did it, are arrested now and in jail. So that was remarkable. So we're going this month. It's so chronistic that you're asking that question, because we are revisiting it with new management on the creator's behalf, and I have a meeting in New York with them on the 17th to launch it again. And now that we have something to bring to the table to help people solve these crimes, where 36% of all cold cases never, ever get solved.
Fantastic. That's the kind of work that really matters with your gift, the helpful kind of things for stuff that would never be seen without intuitive and psychic gifts. But how does one spot a fake, Eddie, if you're out there looking for a psychic to get a reading and you really want direction in your life or you want explanations? How do you suss them out and figure out who's right and who's not?
Gosh, I love this question. And by the way, I've been conned by fakes before, because my mama would fuss at me. She's like, Edward, I need to be more trusting like you are, and you need to be more thing like I am. Because I've always been psychic. I don't know anything else. But if I weren't psychic, I would still be a spiritually kind human being. But because that's all I know about myself, I assumed all people that had a psychic gift were also kind, spiritual people. And then what I learned the hard way from some charlatans is you can be the most psychic human on planet Earth, but you can also be the meanest and the shadiest too. So there's some really good ones that are mean and use people, and the fakes are usually very charismatic. They'll use a little bit more theater. You will notice they're watching your body language and your facial expressions more than they're closing their eyes and tuning in. Sometimes they'll ask leading questions. But what I've learned to do personally, I don't get hardly any readings anymore. I like readings. I enjoy them. I just don't think to get them until something big is going on in my life. It's exciting. I've noticed that they're studying your body more than they're tuning into your spirit and your intention. So long story short, they love to ask leading questions, I've noticed too. The very second they say there's a curse on you, not that I don't believe that you can have some bad energy in your energy field, but then they start hammering you that you will never be prosperous, you'll never have love, you'll never ever lose weight, or whatever, that's when you need to get up and leave if you can.
Right, because all those things can happen if you keep giving them money, and then they'll take away the curses.
Yes, it is so sad.
It is. Now, how can people, ordinary people, who have an inkling that they may have talent in this area, how can they recognize their own psychic abilities?
Love that question. Once you recognize that you have abilities, then work with someone you know and trust, friends, relatives, et cetera, or take classes. Nowadays, you can take all kinds of classes to do everything. And it wasn't like that whenever I was coming out of the gay closet or the psychic closet or the medium closet, right? And so you can have psychic development classes. That's the number one thing I would do. And I'm a big fan of Stephen Pressfield. He wrote The War of Art, Turning Pro, Do the Work, Nobody Wants to Read Your SHIT. Love that book, by the way. And his new book is Put Your Ass Where Your Heart Wants to Be. And if you feel you have a gift for it and you want to be of service to others with that intuitive gift, put your butt in those workshops, in those classes, read the books, watch the documentaries, get still, practice your craft every day. I did three readings my entire life, really. And then when I made the decision to do the psychic readings and go out into the world and do them, I did 2 years worth of free readings for anyone I could talk into sitting down with me to let me do a reading for them for 2 years while I was working my three jobs. And because I loved it that much, and that's what I would say, I'll put your butt where your heart wants to be and do it.
Right, right. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, 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 right?
Yes.
Okay, so then let's talk about how people can find you. I know that you have a website that is Eddie Connor. And, you know, when I pull that up, I get a African-American doctor. So there must be some magic to your website. tell us what that is.
It is. The last name is spelled C-O-N-N-E-R instead of O-R. So it's Eddie Connor, like E-R, like the emergency room. Or my mama would joke and she'd say, we're ers, not ors, Edward. So it's eddieconnor.com, and it's a really clean, it's got lots of good information on it, website. I think it's friendly, but I also think it's very professional, too. I love my website. I love my web designer, too.
Well, it's also, yes, it is warm, and it's got a wonderful picture of you there. People can reach you by simply doing Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, Eddie Appointments, plural, at gmail.com. That's how to contact you, and that's for phone and, like you said, Zoom or whatever you can set up. You also, it's Eddie Connor Soul Awareness is how I found you. And so I think if you're going to write a book that you should use the title, Long Story Short.
That's a great title.
I know, and you've been using it, and it's so good because I just love what you could do with that. Eddie, where do you want to be, and what do you want to be doing 5 years from now?
I love the question. I want to still be doing what I'm doing on a broader scale with television and with books and workshops and seminars. I love, love, love workshops and seminars, teaching people how to connect to their source energy, helping them drop their resistance, helping them get back in touch with their soul awareness literally, and helping them drop what I call their butt predictions in life. I really want a relationship, but I don't want a jerk. So dropping their butt predictions in life. But I want to be, honestly, I want to help people help themselves feel better than they've ever felt.
And what do you see for the world? If you were to tap into your psychic side and give us some wisdom and things that we need to hear, what do people need to hear now? What do we need to know? What can you tell us that will help us as a country, as a nation, as a people?
Wow, I love that curveball, Kat. That was great. And honestly, I know the answer. It is, and people are going to be like, oh, no. But honestly, it's this, stop watching the news. And I'll tell you why. Don't watch the news because it's fear porn, number one. It will trigger your fear and worry and anxiety. And that's the primary reason for the news. So stop watching the news, number one. Number two, there's two kinds of humans on planet Earth. There's connectors, which is what you are and what I am. Connectors are warm, fuzzy people who bring out the best in other people. And then there are attachers. They're not bad. They just are surviving the best they know how to. But an attacher will grab onto someone and drain the life force out of them in order to survive. So connect, connect, connect to yourself and to other people. Stop watching the news and literally appreciate and love everything you can get your eyes and your ears and your hands on, and start talking to people again. Since the pandemic, I've noticed people just are more distant when they're standing with people. They don't conversate anymore. Connect with people so that you end up bringing more light to the earth plane, because right now we've never needed it more than we need it right now. And a prediction is this: it's going to get a little bumpier before it gets better, but it's going to get better very, very, very quick. And then we're going into, no joke, 1,000 years of peace in the dawn of the age of Aquarius. We're coming out of 6,200 years of control, and we're coming into that feminine beauty and connection to source with 1,000 years of peace. And the more peace and love and connection you feel in your head, your heart, and your gut brain right now, the faster you're going to usher that in, and the faster you'll push the ugly BS out.
That is the million-dollar answer. I just want to thank you, Eddie, future author of Long Story Short. You can find Eddie at eddieappointments@gmail.com, and you can find him at eddieconner.com, and you are worth your weight in gold, diamonds, and all the riches in the world. Thank you for spending time with us. I love you. And keep on doing your wonderful work, Eddie Conner.
Oh, my goodness. I love you, too. Thank you. It's been my pleasure and an honor, Kat. Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. And now I turn this back over to Hercules with deep gratitude for allowing us this hour. Thank you, Hercules.
You're very welcome. And thank you for a wonderful show. And thank you, Eddie, for a wonderful show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thanks to all who listened tonight or later on demand, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you dialed in and are patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you'll check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures.